Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to talk to Casey LaBelle. Casey is a UX and design engineering leader with a passion for design systems and accessibility. In her current role as a design architect at iSeats, she's leading the evolution of a design system that powers a white-label travel loyalty platform. Previously, she built and led the multidisciplinary design system team and accessibility program at Boston Scientific, establishing 0-to-1 and 1-to-N strategies and serving as a player coach. In her downtime, you can find her at the beach, an art museum, concert, or game night, walking dogs, obsessing over spreadsheets, traveling, or attending fine arts and crafts workshops with friends. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And today you want to talk to us about puppies.
Yes.
Probably one of the cuter topics we've had on the show.
Yes. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Oh, never. So before we jump in, are we limiting ourselves to talking about puppies or dogs of any age?
All dogs are puppies, no matter how old they are.
I love that. My usual first question is sort of getting into the origin story of where the topic comes into play for you. What's your first memory of a puppy?
Yeah, so my family had our first dog that they brought home when I was probably like 9 months old, like under a year. Her name was Tasha, and she kind of had like the Rottweiler eyebrows and like German Shepherd shape and fluffiness, and was a little bit of a lab, so like true mutt. But growing up, she was my absolute best friend. I would line my Barbie dolls up on her stomach, and she would just lay there and not move a muscle while I was playing. So it's my first experience. And then another young age one was my mom saved like all of my childhood drawings and papers and things like that from when I was a kid. And there was one from kindergarten where I drew a very strange looking picture of what was supposed to be a dog that said, "Casey wishes she was a dog so she could lay around the house all day." So those are my two early memories.
And that's really sweet, because I think, and I'm going to generalize here, but I think people usually have one of two foundational memories or experiences with dogs. Either they are, as the case is with you, a very gentle and loving experience, or they get scared by a dog. And that really informs a lot of their interactions later on.
Yeah, definitely. I am very happy to have the happy, gentle one.
That's wonderful. So you grew up with Tasha, and where from there?
Yeah, so she was with us for about 7 or 8 years. And then we took a year off. And I was about 10 years old when our second family dog, Shelby, came home. And she also big pit bull mix with like a lab face. She had the longer nose, like less blocky head, but she was kind of like a golden lab and had these ice blue, like white husky eyes that people were just like terrified of when they saw her. But she was super, super sweet too. Super cute puppy. And I got her like around the holidays when I was about 10. So there's like a lot of really cute pictures of me holding her around, you know, all holiday celebrations. My mom was a bus driver, and someone, like one of the parents for the kids on her run, had an accidental litter and brought this puppy that needed a home to the bus stop one day. And then she ended up becoming ours.
How involved were you with the upkeep of Shelby?
She was pretty low maintenance. Like, I think going into being an adult dog owner, I didn't really realize how high maintenance some dogs could be, because my childhood dogs were very not high maintenance. But, you know, she had a big fenced in yard. She just liked to hang out and play. She was a little bit tough as a puppy. She had a long puppy phase where she like chewed the kitchen table and chewed this huge like corner out of the wall. She would like take the toilet paper and run it through the house. So it was like a streamer behind her. And that lasted about 2 years. But after that, she was really just a great dog. So I think there wasn't really much maintenance besides getting through the puppy phase.
And it was probably because, I mean, Shelby didn't show up because you requested to have a dog. A lot of times that's, you know, kids request a dog and then, okay, as a condition of that, you're going to take part in taking care of the dog. But in your case, she was another family member from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly.
So you said both Tasha and Shelby were big dogs, or at least relative to your size at the time.
I would say they were probably around like 60 to 80 pounds. I was like small, so relative to my size, they were big, but they were like sizable big dogs.
Those are sizable dogs. I agree with that. Did that influence any sort of thoughts you have about a comfortable size for a dog?
I think that's a really funny question because my first dog as an adult, like my personal dog, was over 100 pounds and he had no idea. He thought he fit everywhere. He would get stuck under things. Like, yeah, there was one time we were at a holiday dinner at my uncle's house and everybody was like, "Where is he?" His name's Rhino. And everyone's like, "Where is Rhino?" And, you know, he's 103 pounds. No one can find him. There's not many places for him to be. He was so underfoot that he was underneath the kitchen table when everybody was eating and everybody got up and pushed their chairs in and he got stuck there because he couldn't get out. And he just stayed there and waited for someone to find him because he was like, "Well, I guess this is just where I am now." So long story short, my comfort size is bigger is better. I like the big dogs.
I agree with you there. There is no disrespect to smaller dogs, but there's something off about that.
Yeah, I started walking dogs on Rover about a year ago, just over a year ago now. And I've had a mix of small and large dogs. And I still prefer the big ones, but like the small ones were cool too.
How did you start doing that? Tell me about your dog walking endeavors.
Yeah, so the not short answer is that I had Rhino for almost 15 years. And after he passed, I took some time. I'm still taking some time. And, you know, I'm not ready to get another dog because I just want all of the dogs to be him. So that's really telling me like it's not the right time. But I was missing dogs in my life because I've had them my whole life from the time I was less than a year old until now. So about a year after he passed, I was up late on TikTok scrolling and I saw this video where the creator was like, "If you work from home and you are not working from other people's homes with their dogs, you're doing it wrong." And I was like, "Oh my God, this person is correct." And I immediately signed up. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I immediately went on rover.com and I signed up and it cost me like $35 for a background check. And I was like, that's like low enough that if nobody picks me, fine. And like within the first maybe 2 weeks, I had a request for a guy who I actually walked yesterday, Toby, and he's a small dog. Yeah, so I just started walking dogs and I think I've had maybe around 15 clients in the last year. About half of them were repeats. And yeah, so just figured it was a good way to heal my heart and get dog time while I'm waiting and get outside and walk dogs and get some exercise and also help me to have better work-life boundaries when some living creature is depending on me to show up for them.
Is it one dog at a time or do you take groups?
Yeah, I have gotten requests for multiple dogs, but I haven't accepted those. A lot of times that's like, I don't know. I've always been a one dog walking person.
And what do you do with them?
It depends on where they live. So I am based in the greater Boston area in Cambridge, and I've walked dogs or taken care of animals. Sometimes it's just a drop-in visit versus a walk in 5 different cities kind of surrounding me. So some of them will be a little bit more suburban where you can get to a trail or something like that. Some of them are like in the middle of Cambridge and are just in a pretty part of Cambridge. So we can walk along the bike path with the wildflowers and the ducklings. And then other times it's like, we're kind of walking through some construction and that's just what it is.
You said you're not ready yet to commit to any dog, and that's understandable. What made Rhino the dog for you?
Oh my gosh. Everything. The first time I met him, he was 3 weeks old, and I sat down on the floor with him and his brothers and sisters, and he crawled over and climbed into my lap and then walked up my chest and nuzzled into my neck. And I was like, he's the one. He chose me. There was nothing like that moment. I remember like it was yesterday, and I was chosen by him.
How big was he?
Oh my gosh, he was so tiny. When I brought him home, he was smaller than a Kleenex box. His head fit in the palm of my hand, and he would have like his front and back legs on each side of my arm, and he like would not reach my elbow. So he was pretty tiny, but that did not last long. 1 month after Rhino passed, my brother adopted a puppy, and she was actually the first dog that I pet after Rhino. So it was a pretty significant moment for me. And he had always said he wanted a boxer, but I looked at her and she was the exact same shape as Rhino, dipped in a different paint bucket. And I was like, that dog is not a boxer. Like, I will bet money. I will pay for the DNA test. Like, and my brother and I have always been a little bit competitive. So the whole like right and wrong of like who's right and wrong thing was pretty fun. But I met her. And, you know, she's her own dog, but she is so much like Rhino that everyone in my family will sometimes accidentally call her Rhino. And she's also that, like, you know, 85, 90 pound, solid, bulky puppy now. And she's just so sweet and so silly. And she feels like him. And she'll, like, come to my house for her vacations with Auntie when they travel. And when she's here, she lays in all of his spots and she sounds like him and she feels like him when she snugs me. So they really have a likeness that's pretty remarkable, and she helps me feel closer to him and get a lot of that love. So now I say that my puppy lives in Maine with my brother.
Tell me about raising him. Was this the first time you were actually raising a true puppy?
He was definitely the youngest puppy I had. I think Shelby was probably maybe 6 months old when she came home, because she was like the last one trying to find a home. Rhino came home kind of early because his mother stopped feeding the puppies. So he was like 5 or 6 weeks when he came home. And I think usually they're like 8 weeks or so. So he was pretty small. He would just hide under everything all the time. Like, I remember losing him in the house and he would just be like napping underneath a dresser or just like lost somewhere. But he was so smart. Like, he didn't really chew anything. He picked up on like house training really quickly. He was pretty easy. I think the hardest thing about him was trying to help him manage his allergies. He was allergic to everything on the earth inside and out.
How was the discipline process?
Super easy. Like, he loved his people. He loved just being around everybody. He knew his tricks. Like, he knew so many tricks. He knew like sit, paw, other paw, high five, other high five, speak, roll over, play dead. I would play in the yard with him, of like have him sit and then stay and then walk far away. That was the hardest one for him because he was my shadow and he just wanted to be like right on my feet all the time. But even that, he would get that. And we just practice everything. And even when he was older and like walking on a leash, because he was so big, sometimes small dogs would not like him. So they would like try and chase him or bite him or all that. So later in his life, he got a little kind of iffy around small dogs, of like, I don't know, like I keep getting bit by these things. So we had to do some kind of re-leash and walk training about like ignoring other dogs and not letting him kind of see them and focus on them and get amped up about it. So I would have him like sit and look at me, and like I would point to my nose and he would get a treat. And it got to the point where anytime he saw a dog, he just sat down, turned around and looked at me in the face and said, "Where's my treat?" And then, you know, sometimes I would not have treats because I forgot to grab them or ran out. And he was like sitting there waiting, like, I'm not moving until I get my cookie.
Well, one of the big questions is, how do you feel about cats?
Tricky question. One for a queer woman. Impossible. You cannot get me on record with this. Cats. I had a cat as a child. Her name was Rocky. They brought her home before me. She was about a year older than me. And they like found her outside somewhere and just took her, which, you know, thinking about pets, I have like this whole side thing of like, we just take these creatures into our homes. And like, that's kind of weird, but I love them. So anyway, we brought Rocky home and they thought she was a boy. And this is showing my age, but it was one of those like kitchen telephone cords that went all the way down to the floor. And she would like bat at it like Rocky Balboa. So they named her Rocky. And then they were like, oh, she's a girl. We're going to name her Raquel, which like our name's gendered anyway. Who knows? Whatever. But I had her for 20-ish years. And after she passed away, I actually developed an allergy to cats. So now this is a little bit tougher for me. Like, I think they're cute and they're very soft and they have very cute feet, but we have to be friends from afar.
Fair enough. When we interact with other people and based on their affinity for or lack of affinity for dogs, is that something you recognize in them?
So I very much would pick up on how someone interacted with Rhino and decide whether or not I felt like they were a cool person based on how nice they were to my dog. And like, he was the best boy. And if somebody didn't like want to get down and roll around on the floor with him or like cuddle him, then I was just like, why don't they love him? What's wrong?
I hope it's okay to ask, but how did your partner take to Rhino?
My partner is very good with Rhino. Gosh, I can't even remember how long it's been now, but it was in the before times of COVID, and she's a school teacher and had April school vacation or some kind of spring vacation week, and Rhino needed surgery, and I was still working in an office, so she actually gave up her vacation to stay with him so he didn't have to be in the cone of shame the entire time while he was healing. So they got along very well. Her biggest complaint was that he took up too much space in bed or on the couch.
Did he have a designated dog bed but prefer to be on the bed?
So he had phases throughout his life. When he was younger, the only thing he would chew was his bed. So then he just didn't have a bed. And then he got a little bit older and had one, but would sleep on the floor next to the bed instead of on the bed. And I swear he was doing it to mock me. Or then he would sleep with like his butt on the bed, but his head on the floor. So he was just like always kind of weird about sleeping on the bed. And then when he got older, he got like the special old man bed for his achy joints. So it was like a memory foam, like king sized thing. And it had the kind of foam around the edge, so he had like built-in pillows and he had his own blanket, and he still just preferred my blanket. So he would like, anytime I would get up from the couch, he would jump on my blanket, and I called it his beetle pose because he would just like round over it, and he just looked like a little beetle, or I guess a giant beetle. But yeah, so he did rotate between his old man bed and other comfy spots, but you know, when he was an old man, he had at least two comfy spots in every room.
So you've been around dogs almost your entire life. You've been walking different types of dogs in a, you know, past year. Do you have specific types or breeds of dogs that you prefer?
Yes. So I'm remembering now that I didn't tell you what Rhino looks like, even though I told you about Tasha and Shelby. So Rhino was a blue nose pit bull. So he was that like gray, silvery gray with a blue tint, like a cool gray if we're talking Pantone. And he had the white stripe up his nose that looked like a horn. And he had the cutest ears. He would wear them all different ways. So like sometimes they were puppy ears, sometimes they were like one puppy ear and one bunny ear, sometimes they were both bunny ears, but one of them was always like up a little bit more. So I called that his curious ear. And he was very curious. Like anytime you were doing something, opening something, whatever you were doing, he was like, I want to see what that is. So sometimes I would call him George for Curious George, his curious ear. So yes, but Rhino was that like big, blocky-headed, solid, like he is a dog, and he was pit bull. And part of the reason why I haven't, you know, fostered, which I looked into, or adopted yet, is because my apartment has new breed restrictions. And, you know, I can't imagine having another dog for its lifetime and it not being a pit bull. Like, I'm more open to fostering other breeds, but like, if I'm taking a dog home and giving it that kind of love, like, it can only be a pit bull.
How do you feel about this misconception that pit bulls are dangerous?
I have a hard time with it from a patient's perspective because I know it's a misconception. When I brought Rhino home, my aunt was like, he's going to eat your face off in your sleep. And I was like, this is insane. No, he's not. Just stop. But, you know, that was something from the time, the second I brought him home until the end of his life, like somebody else was like, oh my God, he's a pit bull. He's going to kill you. And like all of these things. So it's just like people who are uninformed and haven't been exposed to the breed. And I understand with media and stereotypes and the unfortunate treatment that happens, how they get there. I think it's true for a lot of misconceptions that exist in the world today. I used to be filled with statistics that I could rattle off at someone. Since then, I try to be around people who love them. Most of the people in my life at this point love them because they knew Rhino and they know he was the best boy. So it's a little bit easier now.
Yeah. You live in a Boston area, which very much like Toronto is blessed with having four different seasons throughout the year. Did you ever dress Rhino up?
Oh my gosh, yes. He loved it. He was so good about it. He had Halloween costumes. He had coats. All kinds of things. Yeah. We would dress him up for Pride and take him on the tee and made so many friends. So he was a big fan of that. He was a rainbow once for Halloween and we would walk along the bike path and, you know, everyone wanted to say hi.
How did other people, like strangers, react to his breed, to his size?
I think there's one of two responses all the time. People either crossed the street or ran over and said, oh my God, I love him. Can I say hi? He expected the latter and didn't really understand the former. So when people would like go the other way, he would be like, where's my friend going? You know, he loved everyone and everything. If we were walking down the street and somebody like had their car door open and were, you know, taking a bag out or something, he's like, oh, I'm going with them, and would like want to get in their car and just leave me. It was like adventure time. But yeah, he was the friendliest guy. I swear he had more friends than I do. Like, he's anywhere he went.
Was he a fan of winter?
He loved all of the seasons. Like, if he was outside in this, like in the backyard playing in the snow, I would just like throw snow and he would try and catch it. And if I stopped throwing it, he would just like bark. He would like run and catch snowballs. He loved his baby pool. I had like baby pools his whole life and he would just splash them and he would yell at me to splash him in the pool. I would take him swimming. We used to go on vacation to a family friend's house in Vermont and they had a man-made pond in the backyard and he lost 5 pounds 1 week because he just swam in circles around the pond the whole time. Like every time someone opened the door, he would jump in the pond. But you know, also in the winter trips, he would go, you know, snowshoeing with us up to the ice caves and run through the snow. And, you know, sometimes it was so deep, he couldn't actually run through it. So he would just like fall crooked back and forth. Yeah. So he didn't care about seasons. He loved everything. He just loved to be adventuring with his people, sitting with his people, just living life.
So I'm going to take a bold stance here and declare that in this podcast, dogs are the best. What sort of tips would you give people who are maybe listening to this and are considering getting a dog or not sure? What are some ways for them to sort of explore that?
I think part of it is knowing if you're ready for that commitment. You know, some people get a dog and keep them for a year or 2 years or a short-term thing. And like, if you're thinking about that, maybe try fostering instead of adopting or buying. And, you know, in my opinion, if you're taking a dog home, that dog is your baby, which people with human children might not like that stance, but that's fine. But like, this is your family. You don't have them for a couple of years and send them away. And I think just being sure you're looking for, is this dog allergic to a lot of things? Are they high energy? Is the climate right? Like, I'm not going to get a husky in Arizona. I know almost nothing about Arizona, except that it's hot, for the record. but things like that, of like making sure that you are adopting a dog that fits your family's needs and the needs of where you live, and, you know, trying to figure out if the dog's personality kind of fits with your living situation in terms of, like, is it a city where there's a lot of loud noises that might be hard for an anxious dog, things like that.
Are there dogs that you would recommend that you would say, okay, those are dogs that are easier as sort of, you know, dogs that match a first-time owner better?
I think that's a good question. I think there's first-time owners, like when I got Rhino, I'd had dogs as a kid, but I hadn't been an owner. So, like, I didn't know about how expensive allergies can be. And, you know, he had some other health stuff that I didn't even know was a thing for dogs. Like, my dogs as a kid would go to the vet for a checkup once a year. And I, like, basically lived at the vet with Rhino trying to make sure his allergies were under control for a few years. And we had to try, like, tons of different things, like pill medicine. We tried Chinese herbal medicine. We tried diets, allergy shots, medicated shampoo, soaking his feet, wiping his fur. Like, it took a while to figure out his routine. So, like, I wouldn't say that's easy, but from a training perspective, a love perspective, that was the easiest thing with him. So I think it depends.
Awesome. A perfect design answer.
Cheating the question.
Casey, where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn and on the internet at my portfolio, Casey L. LaBelle.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure.
It was so great to come here and talk about puppies. Thank you.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.